Yeah, he was right. Yeah. You know, you don't have to twist my arm on Saturday morning to play anything related to Roger Miller. You just don't have to do it. I'll do it. Just give me a hint. And as I said last week, sad reason for playing that is that it was something that was linked with a young man named Tony Soans who passed away last week. My daughter happens to work for the family, and so it's kind of been a little bit closer than it would normally be. But Tony was known as a naturalist. He's also known as the Bug Man. He was on TV a lot showing really creepy bugs. My wife finally put two and two together. She says, he was the guy who whenever he was on, I changed the channel because he was fun. It was the bugs that kind of creeped her out. But, you know, he made them not quite so creepy because they are all just creatures on this earth. Anyway, today's his funeral down in Bucksport, and I thought it appropriate. I didn't want to play the same version of King of the Road, and I found out there was a tribute album to Roger Miller. It came out in 2018 with, well, you probably recognized a lot of the voices, and it's a pretty good album. So you know, Roger Miller, Tony and Roger Miller have been on my mind all week, and there's some linkage there between the two of them, aside from the song. Both bright people. I read a thing about Roger Miller that, this is before he was really well known. He had a couple of hits under his belt, but they weren't like number one, like King of the Road. Other songwriters would just hang around with him to listen to what he would come out of his mouth, because they were all lyrics that they could, potential lyrics they could steal, because he was that kind of musical genius. So you may find this hard to believe, but there was more Roger Miller queued up. Just because I have to. I mean, and fortunately, there's a lot of good stuff out there. So a lot of stuff going on this week. The Mars rover has finally expired after it was supposed to go for, 600 meters, and it covered 20 kilometers or 40 kilometers on Mars, and has lasted for 10 years instead of a couple of months. And the last message they got from the rover was, my battery is low and it's getting dark. Okay. Let's see. There's a lot of stuff related to the rover. If you want to get online and look it up, I didn't want to go through all of them because I do the whole show with stuff from the rover, but it was interesting to read that. I've been all week slowly boxing stuff up, going through plumbing fittings. I realized, as a person who does manufactures and has manufactured heating things for my whole, I guess, professional, if we want to call it that, life, I have more plumbing fittings than Jimmy Carter had peanuts. I mean, I'm boxing this stuff, and I'm like, oh, man. You know, stuff. I'm not making it this way anymore. I'm making it this way. So I got all new fittings. The old fitting, I got a lot of copper fittings, and I don't want to scrap them. I have to either come up with some fantastic project that uses a lot of copper, or put them on the eBay or something. So that's been an interesting episode. I'm finding I'm emptying shelves and storage bins I'm not sure where it's all going yet, but I told Pete and Maria, my two kids who work with me, that we should take out everything that I need, take it over to the new place, and then just open the doors and have a big sale, like a big warehouse sale for what's left. So maybe we'll do that. I don't know. We are going to have a moving sale, by the way, and as long as I'm on the radio here and I'm pimping myself, we are going to have a automotive moving sale. So if you're looking for, I got a lot of Priuses right now, and we're going to be we're going to cut the prices. I think it's coming. So, you know, if you're looking for something, give us a call. We will treat you well. I did get in a Honda Element that I picked up that has tinted windows, and pimp wheels on it. And you have to see the wheels. I should have them posted on our Facebook page. I'll try to get Pete to do it today. The wheels are like 20-inch wheel for 20-inch tires. I mean, they the gaudy, I guess, would be the word. And they come with the car, and I'm not changing them because somebody probably spent more on the darn wheels and tires than they did on the car. I'm waiting for some parts, and the car will be out for sale. The car's nice. And what else? I give you a list of cars for the week at least. We got a Toyota Corolla that we just did that's almost ready to go. We have got a Highlander hybrid a white Toyota Highlander hybrid that is just nice. My wife wanted to keep it until I told her what she'd have to pay me for it. She would get a discount, but she still didn't want to spend the money. Oh, well. And my wife doesn't drive, by the way. She just wanted me to drive her around in the car. Also have a Mercury Mariner hybrid. I didn't realize, and this is a great selling point, Mercury is no longer a thing. I didn't know that. Anyway, I got a nice Mercury Mariner hybrid. We're waiting for a couple of odds and ends for that. Nothing major. Some tie rod ends and front brakes. Front brakes came yesterday, as a matter of fact. We're waiting, held up on one tie rod end, which maybe will come today. And I got one. I'm not going to tell you what it is until after we take the break. After the break, I will tell you. I got something pretty cool. And I actually got a couple pretty cool things. I'll tell you about them, though. We got to take the break because it's 8:16. I've already talked over a minute longer than I should. And the electric shocks are coming into the collar they have around my neck. So. Hey, we're back. It's 8:20. It's Hot and Cold's Voice of Maine. And let's see. Yeah, I was going to tell you about something. Actually, two special things. One is, you know, I buy a lot of cars online, okay? And I don't always go to look at. Sometimes I can look at them. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I don't. And I had my eye on a 2004 Toyota Tacoma four-wheel drive pickup. Now, famous for lasting forever. This one had 279,000 miles on. I was high bidder last week. I didn't get it. I was high bidder this week, and I got it. So I had to go pick it up. Just leave a little bit of count base in the background there, okay? And, you know, this could go two ways. This could be really stupid, of which I've been known to do stupid things, or it could be really awesome. And first glimpse, I thought, and it was the only thing that was wrong with it is the rear bumper got hit and it got mutilated. So, I look at it, I check the oil, it's got oil in it, start it up, starts right up, needs a muffler, no big deal. I look underneath it. This is the cool part. It's got a brand new Toyota frame. Now I go to auctions a lot, and whenever a Toyota truck has a brand new Toyota frame, everybody gets all excited because there's no rust. And it was obvious, you know, looking at it, there was no rust on the, it's what, 15 years old. Granted, it's got a new frame. There's some surface rust on the differential where you would expect to see it, but the body, you know, the bottoms of the doors, nothing. Amazing. So I got it. I took the bent bumper off, and I'm going to play with it. Now, my son wants to keep that. My wife wants to keep the Highlander. My son wants to keep the truck. No, I don't think so. I want to share the joy. And I drove it to Searsport yesterday, and it rode fine. So that was kind of cool. And I've got another one. I'm not going to tell you because my son might be listening. He's going to be mad at me if he knows I bought it. You think he's listening? No, it's 8:22. He's not listening. Okay. And I swore I would never buy another one, but I did because of the color. I bought a 2012 Fiat automatic transmission, Fiat 500. I don't know if you remember the old Volkswagen buses were kind of that minty green with white on top. And it's just a nice color. Well, they make a Fiat with that color. And I saw it. I said, I got to buy it for the color. Oh, man, that's why I make so much money in the car business. It was a nice color. That's why I bought it. But it was just cool. So I got that. I even told Pete. Don't tell. If you see Pete, please do not tell him. All right? I don't want to hear about it. Till at least it lands. I'd like to have another week or so respite because it's coming from away. So, and then I got a phone call from my partner in lithium battery antics. Well, not a phone call. I got a text message with a picture of these batteries, 50.4 volt lithium batteries. And he's got, I don't know, a bunch of them. They're in crates and stuff. So I look up the battery. He was busy. He didn't get a chance to look them up. I look up the battery. The batteries are used in huge banks. This is a 50-volt, 154 amp-hour battery. So this is a pretty big battery. Used in banks apparently in Europe. I don't think there's any in the U.S. to run electric ferry boats. Now, I don't mean like a two-car ferry boat. I'm talking about a ferry boat that is probably twice the size of what we have going to Islesboro, places like that. This is a big ferry boat, and it's all electric. And it uses these batteries, which are a step beyond. There's a battery chemistry known as lithium titanate, which is a very safe battery. Lithium batteries can be very unsafe. They can catch on fire. They can do weird things if you don't take care of them. Lithium titanate batteries, you can put nails through, you can hit them with hammers, nothing happens to them. This is a step beyond that in terms of energy density, has more energy stored in a given mass, and also in terms of safety. So anyway, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to get my hands on him. He's thinking he's going to keep them, but we'll see. We'll have a discussion over that when the time comes. The chemistry was something lithium, cobalt, manganese, maybe. Anyway, so all interesting stuff. Been a crazy week. I have brought home all my heating stuff to make the change on my heating system. I figured I've already prepared my wife for the fact of having no heat for days. Although I think I can do it in a day. We'll do it on a warm day. And we actually have got work done in our shop this week. Not a lot, but I got something done. And it's visible progress. So that's good. Speaking of visible progress, we could put out the phone numbers, too, at 1-800-966-1039. We got a text line, 601-207-4478. What do we got here? Tom, thanks for playing all the different old music. That song gave me goosebumps. What a talent. I'm not sure which song that was. It was 15 minutes ago. That might have been Roger Miller, which he was a talent, if that's the one you were talking about. Tom, we texted a while ago about a Dynaglow propane space heater that would not light. Your advice was clean the thermocouple, dry toothbrush did the trick. Hey, occasionally I get it right. In a previous life, I was never a gas technician. I never worked as a technician on gas heating appliances. But back in like 1985, when some of the first tankless water heaters came out, one of the companies that was distributing them in the U.S. said, you know, you could use these to heat your house. And being young and naive, I said, oh, that'd be a great idea. We'll do that. And we bought some and tried to space heat with them, and they didn't work very well. There was a lot of physical limitations to the device that doesn't happen anymore. The devices are completely different now. But I got to learn a lot about the devices, and the importer, this is a product made in France, had me become a remanufacturer for him of all the propane devices that were returned to them under warranty. And we set up a lab in Bangor to rebuild these things. And so I got to learn a lot. I had figured out a lot just troubleshooting, trying to use a square peg in a round hole, which never worked right. But I got to learn the device very well. And the guy who was running the operation was from California, would send me water heaters from Europe to look at and analyze of which most of the ones he was looking at, I think, were electric, which were fascinating. But, of course, in the process, we did all the LP rebuilds. And then he had somebody in California who was doing all the natural gas rebuilds, because at the time, of course, we didn't have natural gas. So I'm glad that worked. The thermocouple was a fascinating thing to deal with in terms of if you're not familiar with gas appliances, it's a critical safety device and will tend to fail safe, which is a good thing. We obviously don't want to have fires. It's never makes for a good day. But what else we got? I guess that's pretty much it. 1-800-966-1039 is the phone number if you want to call in this morning, and the text is 601-207-4478. I've been trying to stay ahead of plowing, and I had all these cars come in, and all of a sudden my whole deal between watching to buy cars, having cars come in, people coming to look at cars, and in between all that, this week in particular, we had a lot of snow to plow. And I just remember now, I should have mentioned this about a half hour ago. If you have to go out, especially on secondary roads, be extremely careful. The roads are really slippery. I was amazed. I was on Stillwater Avenue this morning, how icy it was. And in the Prius, if you're sliding, it gives you a little indicator, tells you you're sliding, even if you don't know it. Sometimes you don't. Most times you do. A lot of sliding going on. A lot of ice. When I stepped out of the house, it was down on the coast, it was 34 degrees or something like that. Everything had ice on it. Everything had ice on it. And everybody was driving slow, even the guys in the big trucks. So we got phone calls. Let's go back. Let's go to the phones. We haven't gone back yet. We're going right now. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Well, not bad. Staying in driveways right now.
Oh, yeah.
Fun and profit.
Yeah, this is a moneymaker day for you if you're staying in driveways.
Well, yeah. Anything associated with plowing snow is not necessarily moneymaker.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. What I got going on, I'm in the last stage of renovating an old farmhouse. Mm-hmm. And in the process of it, we've insulated the second floor to isolate it from the first floor.
Okay.
So years ago, the living room section, there was a master bedroom above it with a big sag in the floor, and they had old tuba six, like 16-foot-long tuba six. So we strapped the ceiling downstairs and sheetrocked it level.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a layer of sheetrock and a layer of old plaster.
Mm.
So I stripped off the boards upstairs and sisted on tuba six to level the top.
Yep.
So I'm dropping a 6-inch fiberglass, unfaced fiberglass in between the stringers to finish isolating the two floors so I could just heat the downstairs.
Yep.
Now, am I going to end up with a vapor barrier problem?
That's a good question. I don't think so. I mean, there's going to be enough heat getting up there that I think you'll stay above the dew point in the cavity.
Yeah.
You know, 6 inches of fiber. I would use unfaced fiberglass. I wouldn't use anything with a facer. But even
right,
then,
right.
A faced fiberglass is not really a barrier. So I think you'd be fine with that.
That's good, because I was a little worried about just how, I mean, it'd be impossible to do it now.
Yeah.
Really, it's something I don't want to have to deal with if I don't have to.
I don't blame you. No, I think you're fine. I don't think that's not an issue.
Good deal. I like that.
Yeah. All right,
thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye. Bye. Hey, I tell you what, we're going to take a break here. It is 8:32, and we will, when we come back, we will take some more phone calls. We got text messages. We got the whole thing going this morning. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Okay, we are back. It's 8:38 here at the Hot and Cold radio program on Saturday morning. This is the Voice of Maine. My name is Tom. You knew that. You're here, and we're here, and it's time for me to tell you about Alan at General Appliance. Over on Center Street, that's where he is, in Brewer, Open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. If you're looking for appliance parts or service, you can call him at 989-4341, and he will assuage your concerns about a miscreant home appliance. How's that for big words, Saturday morning? Man, how did I come up with those? That just came out as vocabulary. Anyways, phone number is 989-4341. You notice that sometimes I just do this to entertain myself. Doesn't take much to keep me entertained either. So anyway, Allen and General Appliance, Center Street in Brewer, 989-4341. You need to know that place. You do. Jim in South Bristol's got a long one, not too long one. question about construction, adding on a mudroom this spring. Two schools of thought I'd like you to address if you could. First one is to build something that has to breathe. Second one is newer school of thought. You got to make it tight so it takes nothing to heat. Would like you to address this. I would be happy to, Jim. Make it tight. Make it tight and make it so warm, moist air stays inside the space where you are, not out, doesn't get out into the walls. And, I mean, a mudroom is not big. So it would be easy enough to cut and fit foam into the wall cavities, maybe put a half inch or inch over the inside face of the studs. It could be, or outside underneath the siding, doesn't really matter. But you're just making it tight. Nothing gets through foam insulation. And it'll be easy to heat. And to me, that's the important thing. If you use a fluffy insulation, and that's fiberglass or cellulose, and rock wool comes into this to some degree as well. Fluffy insulation will have air move through it to some degree. Rock wool less than the other two. But tightness of the inside surface still becomes really critical on any of these. If you're going to use a fluffy insulation, we want to keep it really has to be meticulously tight. Foam kind of buys you the wiggle room in that it's impermeable. It's not there's no fibers with air spaces in between. It's plastic with little bubbles in it, and the little bubbles are all sealed usually. So you can and again, for a mudroom, it's not very big. You can cut fit foam, you know, in an hour, maybe 2 hours, depends on the size of your mudroom. And that includes the floor. I mean, don't forget the floor, because that's really kind of a critical place. And the example I use is if we have a building and we want to kind of use an analogy for the way the heat loss is. If you take a colander, it's got all these holes in it, and you try to fill it with water, it never fills because the water goes through the holes. Okay, so you got big hands like me, and you cover half the bottom of the colander. Or you take tape, and you tape off half the holes. Well, what happens? It goes out the other half. So you really have to tape up all the holes, or almost all the holes, to get it to where you want it to be. At that point, as we're getting the colander almost completely filled or taped off, and there's not a lot of leakage, and we've left 10 holes. Let's say there's 100 holes you start out with. There's 10 holes left that can still leak. If those 10 holes allow warm room air to get out to a cold surface, you're going to have a condensation issue. It's that simple. So tightness is a really critical factor. And foam, and you know, some might think I have a bias for using foam insulation. Not particularly. But it just happens to be an impermeable thing, except for low-density foams, which you shouldn't use in this case. But and the floor is, you know, it if you insulate the room, you insulate the walls and the roof, the air up near the ceiling is going to be nice and warm. As you get down closer to the floor, it's going to be cold. The air is going to stratify. So the floor could be arctically cold, whereas at your head level, it's warm. But your feet are cold. If it's a mudroom, you're taking your shoes off, your feet are cold. I'm not happy. Maybe you are. I'm not. So insulate the floor. And again, sandwiching it with foam is not a big deal. It's pretty easy to do. And if you have, excuse me, if there's a question about the process, that's what we're here for on Saturday mornings at 1-800-966-1039. We got a text line, which is 601-207-4478. And Jim's a shy guy. He doesn't always call. He usually texts me. So the texts are right there for you to contact me. And we can be shy, and that'll be that. I just got a text message from Pete. He is at our place of business. He said, the driveway is a literal skating rink. I almost hit our building sideways. Yeah, I'm not surprised. Fortunately, we do have snow melt left over from when we did the, we were melting the ice on our building slab. So let's go back to the phones. We got some phone calls. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I've got a couple of lots on a gated community type thing next to a lake. Not on the water, but, you know, off the water. Shared beach, mm-hmm. shared lake thing. We were required to have septic system, but they let somebody do kind of a rainwater thing with a gas toilet and all that kind of thing. And I'll tell you, I haven't figured, it's hard to figure out how the heck he did it. I haven't been able to contact him yet, but have you had any experience with this type of thing yet?
I have not. The dilemma is this: when you have a septic system, you're disposing of water. Basically, it may be polluted water, and that is, it's black water from a toilet. So certainly a composting toilet or a gas toilet or whatever is going to mitigate that end of things. But you still have dirty water coming out of a shower or a sink, right, or doing dishes, and there's chemicals in there. There's phosphates and detergents and stuff, which is a pretty major pollutant for a waterway. And some kind of leach field has to be put in place to accommodate that and kind of filter it, for lack of a better word, so it doesn't hit the lake and pollute the lake. And it's doable.
That would be from the rainwater, right?
If you got rainwater and you're using it for a shower, you got to discharge it somewhere, and it's going to be into a gray water disposal field as opposed to a black water disposal field.
What about drinking water? Just you use bottled water?
I guess you're going to use bottled water. You can disinfect rainwater. You could filter it and disinfect it. It's a question of, is it worth doing?
This would be a lot less than putting in a whole septic system, right, to do this kind of thing?
You know, it really is a function of the soils, I think, what the soils are like. Sometimes my understanding is these systems can be as big as a regular septic field. The catch is this. I mean, there are systems that you can do, septic systems you could do on a site like this. One is the peat moss system, which we have in Stockton Springs. The other is Presby Environmental has some systems that are akin maybe in some ways to the peat moss systems, in that they're very compact systems. And there's a lot of biological stuff jammed into a very small area. The peat moss, I tell you where we are, where we were in Stockton Springs, which is where we're moving our business to. I bought the property, had a bathroom in it. I just assumed it's got a bathroom, toilet flushes. Okay, everything's good. Well, one of my kids was living there, and about 3 months in, he says, toilet's not flushing right. So I said, well, we got to get the tank pumped. So I call the septic guys, Moores out of Swanville, and they come over and they pump the tank. And he says, I got to show you something. Here's your tank. It's a 55-gallon drum, and we have really high groundwater there. So a septic system was going to be really constrained. And what we wound up doing was putting in a peat moss system. Now, the peat moss system is on top of the ground. I built a hemlock, and this is from Joan Brooks, who invented the peat moss system. We built a hemlock box, 16 feet high. I want to say it was 20 by 16 or something like that. I built this hemlock box. We backfilled against it. 3 feet high. I'm sorry. Oh. It's 16 by 20 feet footprint, but it's 3 feet high. And she's done a number of these in really difficult sites. And what comes out of them, they can be adjacent to waterways because what comes out is basically very clean because you're using real peat moss, not stuff you buy at the garden center, but peat moss from a peat bog that is biologically very active.
That's like from a bog in Maine?
Yeah, out in Du Bois.
You cut that. Floating mat? Is that the peat moss?
It was a truck with a live bottom. It was the size of these trucks that haul salt. I mean, it was a huge amount of peat moss, and they dropped it on site.
It was green, right? Green color?
No, this was brownish, as I recall, but it was live. Okay. It was live peat moss, whereas the stuff you buy has been kind of dried to make it easier to handle.
And it
works very well.
Was it expensive, the peat moss? The big truck.
I think I spent $1,500 for the truckload.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting.
And there is a little bit of art to the way the peat moss goes in. I think I'll look this up during the next break, which is coming right up. I think we've got it up on YouTube, the videos, so you can see the actual installation. And it has a musical interlude, so it's even better. Let me check just to make sure.
Hickory wood? Hickory, you said? The wood?
No, hemlock.
Oh, hemlock.
Yeah.
Hemlock.
Yeah.
So. Oh, my God. Wow. This is pretty cutting edge, and that's what you're doing.
Well, we did. This is about 10 years ago we did it, and Joan has done these for a number of years.
I thought it was for your new lot that you just got.
No, this is a property I've owned, and we're just moving back there. We hadn't been there in a while.
Oh,
so.
And that's state and town approved.
Yes, sir.
Things, huh?
Yep. So let me tell you what. I'm going to check on the break's coming right up. After the break,
Hey, thanks a lot.
I'll let you know.
Appreciate
okay,
it.
Thanks. Yeah. There was, I think we did 3 TV shows on it. One just testing the site, and then one building the system. And I think that was 2 episodes, if my memory serves me right, with musical interlude. And it was a fair bit of work. I mean, it was probably more labor than putting in conventional peat moss heating. Conventional septic system is involved. At my house, we had a similar episode when I bought that property. I was told we had to put a new septic tank in, and I'd gotten the quote to have the septic tank put in. And we had the septic tank put in, and I was talking to the guys from Moores who set the tank for me. And they said, well, you got a camera. I'll show you the leach field. And he got the camera all out, and he grabbed the pipe that was coming out of the tank that went into the leach field, and it came out in his hand. And we're looking in the field, and it's stones, just fist-sized stones. It wasn't very big. So The inspector was already coming out, so I said, well, we're going to get a site evaluator out here. And we wound up putting in a Presby system for that, which is basically a sand bed system. And what that uses, which is kind of somewhat analogous to the peat moss system, is a perforated pipe with expanded plastic that allows space for bacteria to build up. So the bacteria can work on breaking down all the stuff that would come out of the septic tank, you know, the effluent, and make it safe to be absorbed into the ground. And we're adjacent to the ocean and a tidal stream. So it, you know, obviously should be done right. And it was funny, in both cases at the time, we did both these within probably 2 years of each other. The DEP was going around because there was a lot of septic systems that were not functioning properly in the region, and they were trying to get them cleaned up. In both cases, they came to see what I was up to. In both situations, we were in the process of putting in the new system because we had discovered we had a system that was, let's say a little wonky. So anyway, it was an interesting experience in both cases, two different, completely different kinds of systems. Both of which, when all was said and done, function as they were supposed to. So, let's see. I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to fade out into the end of the hour here. I've got a tune set up that is worthy of listening to, a little more than just the traditional 20, 30 seconds before the end of the show, end of the hour. So this is Chet Atkins, Bela Fleck, and Jerry Douglas from probably the 1980. I'm looking at the wardrobe and how young everybody looks, the ones that are still alive at least. And that was 1980. I'm going to say 1982. Here we go. We'll be back. It's hot and cold. Stay with us. We got another hour. Yeah. If you you know what that is. I don't have to. Do I have to tell you? That is the original. That's not the mutated kind of electronic version. That's the original Captain Kangaroo theme song. And the name of that song, the original name of the song, is Puffin' Billy. And was written about a train on the Isle of Wight in the UK. So there you go. Thank you, Captain. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. It is not the Captain Kangaroo Show, although it could be. Mr. Green Jeans will be in here in a little while. This is Hot and Cold on Saturday morning. I'm Tom, and our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Our text line is 601-207-4478. And let's do this. We'll go over to the phones on line one. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, my question is, I have leaks in my ceiling, and I'm not sure why. We have a cathedral ceiling, and last fall we had a windstorm, and it blew off some shingles, and so we ended up getting a whole new roof on, which was, we went to metal roof. Well, they ended up taking all the old shingles off, and they put tar paper, and then they put ice and water shield on it.
Yep.
And then they put the metal roofing on it. They didn't strap it.
Yep.
And now, like this winter, when we got that 50-degree weather, there's leaks. We have a V-match cathedral ceiling.
Yep.
And there's leaks coming out.
Yeah.
And it's even leaking outside under the eaves.
Yep. Did this ever happen before when you had the old roof?
No.
Isn't that interesting? I know what the problem is, and you're not going to like it, but The before, you know, cathedral ceiling with V-match is just a sieve for warm air getting out into the cavity and freezing on the bottom side of the roof decking. In your case, I think what was happening, it was able to evaporate through the shingles. So when they re-roofed and put ice and water shield on, and then steel on top of that, you've got two barriers that are fairly impermeable. So the moisture that was getting was getting up in there before wasn't getting trapped. Now it's getting trapped. And I've seen this before. We've done house inspections where we've seen this multiple times. It's always a V-match ceiling. There's always fiberglass in the ceiling. And it's just because it you know, if it was sheetrocked, there's fewer cracks with wood. Would like this. There's a lot of cracks. And unfortunately, what they did with the roofing kind of aggravated the problem.
Okay.
You're not going to like the solution. The solution is to do something probably on the inside. The insulation, it needs to be sealed better on the inside.
Okay.
And that means either taking the ceiling down and foaming it, putting foam over the ceiling and then putting a new ceiling on top of it. But you've got to get a barrier in there to stop warm, moist air from getting up through into the cavity. Because what you're seeing coming out of the eave is all, you know, on a warm day, it's just building up ice up there in the cold weather. And then it's melting because it can't get out through the way it was with the shingles. And I've seen it happen with shingle roofs too, but you had sort of a balance there before with the shingle roof. It was able to shed enough water that you weren't seeing leaks.
Right,
That ship has sailed.
Okay.
So I'm not sure who pays for that at this point. I have a feeling you do because the roof is doing what it's supposed to do.
Right.
Unfortunately, they just did everything to aggravate it.
So you're saying a spray foam versus regular rolled insulation?
Yeah, well, it doesn't have to be spray foam. Spray foam's, you know, I looked at a house years ago, and what had happened was it was a new house, and it had this problem. It was coming out the eaves. It wasn't dripping so much in the house, but there were huge icicles coming out the eaves. I mean, it was amazing how much ice was coming out. And so the builder and the architect and the homeowner all agreed there was a problem. As I say, it was a new house. And they agreed to split the cost three ways. The builder came in, stripped the roof, built the roof up 12 inches on the outside, put more rolled insulation in, fiberglass, put a new roof on, and guess what? It still leaked.
Oh, no.
What a nightmare. I mean, they spent a lot of money, and it still leaked. And so now I'm looking at it and say, well, what do I tell this person so this does not happen again? And I said, you know what? If it were me, I would be cutting and fitting foam into the cavity or getting a layer of foam on the inside as a barrier. In your case, where you have this nightmare scenario and everybody has already spent a ton of money, I would use spray foam because spray foam is sort of anywhere the spray foam is applied, you can see you've got a solid barrier and you're not going to get moisture passing up through. So if the V-match came down, the fiberglass came down, if they spray foamed the backside of the roof so it's all tight and it doesn't have to be filled, they could do, say, 2 inches. And then put the fiberglass or new fiberglass in, that would solve the problem.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
All right,
good luck.
All right, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I'm sorry. You know, I hate to tell people stuff like that, but they got to dig into it. And the V-match, you know, I got a call last week, I guess, from the Department of Motor Vehicle about what should they be doing in terms of inspections for hybrid cars or electric cars? And so we chatted about that a little bit. You know, is there anything that they should be looking at when they do automotive inspections? Because, you know, this is just becoming more and more prevalent that we have cars with big batteries. And unfortunately, in terms of building construction, in terms of cathedral ceiling, you know, to me, nothing is more attractive than a wooden ceiling. It just looks nice. And usually, if it's a retrofit, if you don't have a code person involved, it's very likely that scenario like we just discussed, which I've spoken to folks many times on this show about exactly the same kind of problem. Maybe it's dripping on the inside instead of coming out the eaves. One of the ones we looked at, it was coming out the eaves. I remember another one was just dripping in the house. But it's never good, and it's always expensive. And I feel terrible having to tell people they're gonna have to deal with it. To a major, you know, it's an investment to have to fix it. But the good news is it will be hopefully done right, and you'll save energy. Sure, the cost of the fix is how much energy savings there will be versus the cost of the fix, but it has to be done. You can't live like that. anyway, I got to take a break here. It is 9:15. I already missed an hour. That first hour just went. We'll be back in just a few minutes. It's hot and cold. It's Saturday morning. Stay with us. We got plenty of time to talk. That was very precise cut there. I didn't do that. There's somebody else did that. Oh, listen, you know, I get distracted. There's too much going on here. I did look up the peat moss thing. And if you just go to YouTube, put in hot and cold and peat moss, you'll get very concise explanation of the system. We have some news clips that we had aired way back when. They're only a couple of minutes long, so they're real easy to digest. And then there's a pun there, isn't there? And if you go down through, there's a number of other folks who have, dealt with peat moss in this scenario for septic systems. So Joan is the person who invented it, though, Joan Brooks, from Eddington, Maine. So there. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Our text line is 601-207-4478. We got no text. We got no phone calls. I guess I'll just sit here and go do-wack-a-do. You know, well, being as I'm in this Roger Miller vein, if you will, I came across this, and this was Roger on the Johnny Cash show. Johnny trying to get him to make up songs on the on the spur. Here we go. Hang on. Let's do this right, Tom. Am I on the right? I'm on the wrong one. There we go. Okay, and that was good enough to get the phone ring. Let's go back to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi, I just love it that it's Roger Miller Day.
Yeah.
I want to try and get a quick reference for A, where I might find some either stovetop or electric water distillers, or and B, where I would find them. So stovetop or electric Ooh. Water distillers, and where would I get one?
I've seen them. I don't remember where. I would start on eBay and Amazon just to see. eBay okay. probably being the more accurate place. They're not that complicated. And I've seen them where they're electric plug-in deals, and I'll look during the break as well. But I would start on eBay.
Oh,
everything's
well,
on eBay.
That's where I'm a Luddite. I don't know about that, but I'm going to go look around for some face-to-face distillers and see what I can do. But thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Yeah, you got it. It's not that hard to get online. You do need a computer. I'm going to look up distillers right now on the eBay. Right there, we go. And that's distiller's yeast. We don't want. Unbranded distillation filters, water distiller stainless steel. Right there. 4-liter upgraded pure water distiller filter stainless steel, $81.17. There's the same one for $68.96. So they are out there. I don't know what store you could possibly find them in, but there may be some. Here's one that uses a stovetop to distill water. So you put the pot on your stove and boil the water, and it distills. So they are out there. There's one that looks like a bun coffee maker there. It's all stainless steel. Just distills water. So anyway, for what that's worth, 1-800-966-1039 is the number to call on Saturday morning, which gets you through to this radio station, this radio program, this thing we call Hot and Cold. And I should take, what did I just do? Oh, my goodness. I hit that button there. There we go. Here we go. We got a text message here. Tom, I sent this last week but missed any response. When will I be able to put in a drainage system to move water from my foundation? I looked but did not find a soil temperature depth from the USDA. Are there agencies that will help determine a proper drainage plan? That's a good question. I'm not sure, you know, from year to year, it's going to vary in terms of the frost penetration, and that's something you can poke around with a shovel and get a pretty good idea. But I'm going to guess you're looking at March, middle to end of March at the earliest. Probably April is better. In terms of a plan, that's really a soil scientist thing. You may be able to get the there is a soils group with the USDA. I would also check with Cooperative Extension out of the University of Maine. They might have somebody who can actually come out and guide you in terms of what you might have to do. That's what they're there for, is to make living in Maine not so miserable. It's not miserable. Not this morning. Back to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yes, I was calling to get on the Hot and Cold show this morning.
You're on it right now.
All right.
Yeah.
So my name's Joe, And I got a question. I built a ranch house a couple years ago, and my problem is that I have got some condensation buildup in the wintertime, and when it gets a warmer day out, it melts a little bit on the gable ends, and it causes some leakage down into the house.
So my question is... Where is this condensation forming, inside the attic or outside the house?
Inside the attic.
Okay.
And my question is, I kind of got three schools of thought on how I'm going to fix this, either kind of a passive, just put some vents in the eave, or I was thinking that maybe I would put in a fan system, or I'm sure there's another option that I'm just not aware of.
I would start out with the easiest one, which is just put some gable end vents in, especially where the condensation is on the gable ends. That may be adequate. But in addition to that, if you kind of looked around to where you might have air leaking up from the house into the attic, like the attic hatch, maybe weather stripping that and sealing it, that would be probably a major area where moisture is getting up through. I would start with those two. Get the gable end vents in. No fan. Don't use a fan. It's just going to aggravate tend to get more moisture into the attic from the house. It's more critical to seal the holes coming up from the house into the attic. And depending on the kind of insulation you have, you can root around and pull it back. If it's fiberglass batch, you can pull it back and look for holes where wires come up through and the like, and seal those holes with can foam. And put the insulation back down again. And if you don't have, how much insulation is up there?
So we have blown in fiberglass, and there is whatever was the recommended for the attic space. I don't really remember. I know it was a significant amount.
Okay. Well, if it should be well over a foot, and I wouldn't mess with it too much if it's intact and looks reasonably tight. But I would be sealing the hatch, and I would get some gable end vents in and see if that solves it for you.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and okay. I'm going to give those a try.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye. Ideally, you can go further steps. It's kind of unfortunate whoever insulated the attic didn't ventilate it. That's something that you should do when you're using that kind of insulation. There should be some kind of ventilation in place, either a cap vent, a ridge cap vent, and soffit vents, or gable end vents at least. Gable end vent is going to be fairly easy to accomplish, so I would start there. We got to take a break here. When we come back, we will take some more of your calls at 1-800-966-1039. Stay with us. It's Hot and Cold. Hey, we're back. It's 9:34. It's Hot and Cold on Saturday morning. The phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. If you'd like to call in this morning, and looks like we've got a phone call right there right now. So we'll just go right back over to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, Tom. How are you today, sir?
Hi.
Hey, Tom. When I was recently wiring up an electric dryer, I pulled some insulation off above my electrical box, and some of my wires there had been chewed, so the bit of copper was sticking out, which I almost grabbed onto.
Yeah, I'm getting about half of what you're telling me. You're fading in and out.
Any better now, sir?
Yeah, try that.
Yeah, Tom. I noticed some of my electrical wires right before they go into my electrical box, which the insulation had been chewed off some of them.
Ooh.
Most likely that a mouse, or would it have to be a squirrel or something bigger? Or
yeah, it's a critter. It's either a mouse or a squirrel. That's not good.
And I almost grabbed onto the wires, so that wasn't a good deal, you know.
Are the wires bare?
They had some of the insulation off them, so I could have got lifted if I, you know, saw what was going on. So.
Oh, nice. So what you have a question about that? What to do, or
how big a hole, Tom, does it take for a mouse to get in your house? I got a newer house, but apparently there's something there. He's
yeah.
in somewhere.
A quarter inch, they can really squeeze into things. I have where we are now, we have two big doors, and one of the doors is missing a piece of weather stripping. So I put a piece of 2x8. Up against where the weather stripping would be to maybe block critters from coming in, and I see where a red squirrel has chewed through the wood to get his way in, And he had an opening probably that was maybe a half inch for a red squirrel, which is pretty sizable. And he runs around inside the shop. So we don't keep any food out. I hate to say it, but maybe decon is what you're going to need. There's the opportunity of them dying in your house, but that smell doesn't last forever. That's a terrible thing to say, but I mean, the potential there of having a fire increases significantly if you've got this kind of activity.
Will spray foam stop them? If I find a hole that needs to be plugged, will they chew right through it?
They'll go right. I think they'll go through it. I don't think it's going to be a barrier, although some people say it is. I don't think it is.
Okay.
Hardware cloth or something metal. Hardware cloth is maybe 1/4-inch squares. That's a little bit beefier over the opening. That would keep them out.
Okay, so that's what I'll have to do. All right, I appreciate it, Tom.
Okay, good luck. There's a lot of other things you can do. Some folks, I was in somebody's car. They had I believe a mouse in it, and you get a critter in a Prius and there's a lot of wires to chew on. I've never dealt with that where we've had wires chewed on by a critter, but it could happen. And they put mothballs in the car, and I don't know you wonder which is worse, the disease or the cure. The mothballs certainly keep the critters away, but it isn't a pleasant driving experience. Anyway, we got some phone calls. Back to the phones we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yeah. Hey, Tom. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great. Thanks. Hey, I'm looking at building a lake home about 28 by 40.
Hmm.
It'll be a property that we'll live in 3 seasons, probably not so much during the wintertime, but would like to keep it heated.
Yeah.
A lot of southern exposure, a lot of glass on the front, and I'm looking at foam insulation, and the reality is obviously it's not cheap, but thinking about the benefits of putting foam, insulating the whole property with foam, relying on a lot of solar heat to keep it heated during the winter time,
mm-hmm.
With a little bit of assistance from a furnace. But wondering, in your experience, is the cost of foam insulation to insulate your whole home, is it worth it? Do you get the payback out of it?
I don't know if I would call it payback as such. I think it's a little bit more expensive. I'm going to say there is a payback involved. I think from a comfort point of view, it's going to be a much more comfortable building summer or winter. And you don't necessarily need to be using spray foam. A lot of people do. That's their solution, is just to go in and spray foam the building. And it certainly works well. It's quick and easy. One day it's not insulated. The next day it's insulated. A alternate scheme would be to wrap the entire building, say, with 2 inches of foam, and then insulate the walls with standard insulation like rock wool or fiberglass or cellulose. And the foam on the outside will keep everything tight on the inside if you make sure you seal the cracks properly, and will also keep the wall cavity above the dew point so you do not get this condensation issue we've been talking about all morning with these cathedral ceilings.
And it's a cathedral ceiling, exactly.
Okay. So, that would be what I would do. If I was doing a building, say, and I wanted to have exposed beams and V-match, I would build the building, put the beams up, put the V-match over it, and then I would put maybe 5 inches of foam, of sheet foam, on the roof on the outside and then strap over it and then put a metal roof on top of that. And the beauty of that is you can layer the foam, you can offset the joints, and it kind of almost self-seals because you get long screws and you can screw down into the beams, and you've got a really high-integrity roofing system that is more affordable than anything else. You know, if you tried to use spray foam in an application like this, you're then going to be framing it up as if you were putting fiberglass in there. So you got all that framing cost, and it gets real expensive real fast. So the sheet foam will be at least half the price of the spray foam.
Yeah, makes sense. Great. Yeah. Hey, thanks a lot, Tom. Okay. Very helpful.
All right, you're welcome. Bye-bye. Let's see. Over to line two. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning, Tom. I'm calling from East Small Market.
Hey.
I have a heat pump. I have only had the heat pump or the furnace on maybe a half hour this winter.
Good.
And I got to thinking before I turned it on, I wonder if the snow has filled my chimney. So I ran downstairs and stuck a mirror in to find out that it hadn't.
Okay.
Which would have been quite a concern if I had started the furnace with a chimney plug.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been down that road. And the thing is this, what can happen in a chimney, and I'll tell you a quick story, I'll tell the story afterwards, is if it may not be plugged, but it may be cold enough that it won't draw. And then you've got exhaust spilling back down, even though the chimney is open. It's so cold, it takes a while to establish a good draft. And Dick had told the story of making a fire in the clean out with some newspaper to induce a draft to just try to get it going. It's probably not as big a deal with oil, but it has the potential of backdrafting on you, which is never fun. But it was a smart move to check it ahead of time.
Okay, I've been trying to get through for a couple of weeks. I finally did, and I'm glad.
Okay, well, nice to talk to you. Thank you. Bye-bye. I'll tell you a quick story. Back in 1980, let me think what kid we had at that point. I'm going to say 1982, January 1982. I was working for a consulting firm on Long Island, New York, and they wanted me to come down to do something. I don't know, we were doing environmental impact statements or something. I most of the time got to work out of my house, which was just most awesome job ever. I made good money, worked out of the house in Bangor, Maine. Anyway, they wanted me to come down, and I was heating my house with wood, and I had no backup system in place. And I would go to PV Manufacturing once a week and get wood in the pickup truck, and I'd have a whole week's worth of wood for $5 and heat the house. Well, my neighbor's going to watch the house for me. I'm going to leave January, second week of January. So I drained the heating system, which was hot water, radiators, and I left the, and don't groan when you say this. I was young and stupid, okay? I had a gas water heater in the basement that was on. I disconnected the flue and let it vent into the house, thinking that would help keep it a little bit warm, maybe above freezing. And, of course, as soon as I left, it went to 20 below. And about 3 days in, the house froze. And I hadn't antifreezed any of the fixtures. Come back. There was a blizzard. I come back. I had my wife, my kids with me. I come back, and we get into the house around noontime. It's 28 degrees in the house. I was able to light a fire in the fireplace. I put my wife on the sofa with the two kids in front of the fireplace. I gave her a bottle of brandy, and I commenced to try to fire up the wood system. Now, the system is cold, and nothing had frozen. The basement was okay. The toilets had froze. A single toilet. It had not cracked by the grace of God above. It had not cracked. So I think I might have had an electric heater running in the bathroom to try to thaw the toilet. And I'm downstairs trying to light off the wood fire. And all it was doing was going into the flue and coming out the clean out door. And it just wasn't drawing. So finally, this is way before I knew Dick, I finally got some newspaper and made a fire in the clean-out door and got it to draw. But in the meantime, I had the basement window open. It was 20 degrees out probably, and a fan to get the smoke out. And there used to be a fire station. I lived on Center Street at the time. There used to be a fire station down the street. So I'm blowing smoke out of my basement window onto Center Street. I'm waiting for the fire department to show up. We got home around noon. Round about six, I think the toilet, four or six, something like that, the toilet thawed, had not broken. Again, it was a miracle of modern science, or miracle of me leading a charmed existence that it did not break. And it was 24 hours before I got the house up to 70. But I had introduced water into a heating system that was below freezing. And so I had to get the water in the boiler, so I can't dry fire the boiler. And then I had to introduce it slowly to fill the heating system up with warm water. It was, And I did it. I don't want to do it again, but it was an experience. And a similar thing, though, in terms of the years later, Dick and I shared that story. Let's see. Tom, I called you earlier about my V-Match ceiling leaking. A friend of mine was listening to the show, and he was wondering where we have a wood stove, and I have a kettle of water on the stove. I remove the water. Would that help keep moisture? It ain't going to hurt. You shouldn't have a kettle running in this situation. I'm not sure that's going to solve it, though. If you've got as much moisture as you're telling me, but I guess I would try it. And, you know, the problem is that if a house is not well insulated, it tends to dry out really fast. So what do? We tend to introduce moisture because we don't want to have a dry house. And it just kind of aggravates the problem, and that may help you. You could certainly try it. I mean, you can't do anything right now anyway. So stop introducing moisture into the house. And if you have a bathroom fan, you know, if you're using the shower, you got a bathroom ventilation fan, certainly be using that. And in the kitchen, likewise, if you're cooking pasta or something, make sure you ventilate. That it may get you around it. I'm going to guess not, but maybe you'll be lucky. Let's see. Red squirrel season is 365 days a year. There's no limit on red squirrels as opposed to gray squirrels, which are now out of season right now. This fact makes it obvious who is the nastiest critter, Mr. Red. So again, it's open season year round. Yeah, you could do that. I'm not gonna. There's only one red squirrel we deal with, and he's kind of family at this point. We have red squirrels on our porch, which can get under my skin at times. But they're just trying to eke out an existence. And as long as they're not, they haven't destroyed anything in my shop other than chew on a piece of scrap wood that's on the floor, which I have some admiration for their, for their stick-to-itiveness. I don't remember if it's, I might be pressure treated, which means at the very least they're going to have a stomach ache, if not worse, if they keep chewing on that. But they can be annoying critters. The person who had called about the wires, I'm suspecting the wire issue is more related to mice than the squirrels, given that it's a new house and it's getting in the, you know, if you got squirrels in the walls, you're going to know it, or even in the basement or the house, whereas a mouse would be pretty discreet. You're not necessarily going to hear it or know what's going on until you find something like this. And it may be, I didn't mention at the time, but it may be worthwhile at this point to have an electrician take a look at that. If you're not inclined to do that kind of work, you certainly have got to do some repairs, and that isn't just electrical taping it. You really got to deal with it the right way. It's kind of an interesting aside here. When you do a commercial building, you have to have your wiring in conduit. And I have gotten into doing more and more wiring and conduit, mostly because most of the wiring I've done lately has been at work. And I just find it kind of gratifying in a couple of ways. One is that I have access, easy access, to the wires if I want to change something. But also it's all protected. So if that squirrel or mouse or critter with the teeth that keep growing that they want to wear down the teeth, they've got to get into the conduit before they get into the wiring. So the even if it's plastic conduit, they still got to whittle through a fair bit of it, and usually it's visible. And if it's metal conduit, ain't nothing happening. And I've done both. I've used both. My preference is plastic, just because it's a little bit easier for me to work with. I cut myself a little bit less. I like the fact it's not conductive, but I also like the durability of metal. And when we wire up the new place, probably have a combination of the two. So our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Our text line is 601-207-4478. As I mentioned, first hour of the show, we're gearing up a moving sale on all the cars that we have as the date becomes closer and closer. So if you're looking for a fine used Prius, be sure to check in with us. And we've got a number of other cars, not the least of which is one that I just flip. You know, I just like white cars. They you know, and white cars can be a problem. Sometimes they can be rusty. Well, I got a white Highlander hybrid last week, and boy, what a nice vehicle. My wife wanted to buy it. My wife, who does not drive. I said, no, I don't collect cars. Let's go back to the phones. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Morning, Tom, Dave, and Bradley.
Hey, Dave.
Say, could you pontificate on knob and tube wiring? In these old houses, sometimes it's buried in the ceiling and under the floor and got blown-in insulation packed around it. And I'm wondering what the safety problem is with the insurance companies. If those wires are separated by a foot or so, well, what's your thoughts on how aggressive do people need to be on getting rid of knob and tube?
Yeah, good question, Dave. I'm kind of aggressive about it just because I don't know what's been done to it over the years. Having said that, I've been into houses that I've bought, and the first thing I did was shut off the power and take the wire cutters and disconnect a lot of the wiring because it just scared me. I can't say, and I'm sure you've seen it too, how many houses you get into where somebody has wire nutted stuff together and it's just hanging out there. And I think knob and tube kind of encourages that kind of activity and may or may not be in any given situation. So I generally resign myself in an old house to just rewiring everything. It's a hassle, and it's expensive, and I appreciate now, having done a number of old houses, the fact that electricians do cost a fair bit of money when they rewire an old house because it's just miserable, dirty work. You're poking holes everywhere, and if you're an electrician, at what point do you stop second-guessing what some character did 40 years ago who thought they knew something about wiring? Not to mention there's no ground. We're not sure which side. You know, there's just a lot of things that can be done improperly. And I fancied myself somebody who knew about electrical work at times when I didn't know a lot about electrical work. And I hate to say it, but there's a lot of folks who think that way, that they know what to do because they haven't killed themselves. But I'll give you an example. Building I used to be in Searsport, I rented. Relatively new building, I think it was put up in the 70s, had circuit breaker boxes, circuit breakers. I think it had two electrical services for some reason, no particular reason. All the wiring was backwards. So, and by that I mean color code-wise, usually when you wire with Romex, you got a black and you got a white. Now, everybody knows, the black is the hot, the white is the negative. And on the outlets, when you look at an outlet, here's a big secret. If you're facing the outlet, the wider spade, if you will, the plug has two prongs that are relatively flat. The wider one of the two is the neutral. The thinner one is the hot. This whole building, this was a big building, 6,000 square feet, every one of them was wired backwards. So you look at that and you think, well, what do we do now? They were wired properly in the box. So the black went to the breakers, the white went to the neutral bond, the ground was the ground. Every outlet was done backwards. I don't know if it was some dyslexic person, but you know, unfortunately, it was somebody who didn't have a clue about wiring, and I rewired a couple of the outlets, and I thought, well, geez, maybe I should just swap it in the box. I can't do that. You know, color code is color code. Then I'm really going to have somebody head spinning if and when they ever had to dig into it. So we pull each one apart one by one. I did as many as I had to and left the rest for the next person. And they are I see they're rewiring the building for good reason. Anyway, I got to run. We're out of time. We'll see you all next week, same time, same place. If I turn up the music, it helps. We can go away. Take care.